God for a miracle, and you know we can do the impossible. Shout yeah.
You're listening to the Climbing Higher radio broadcast with Bishop Eric A. Lambert Jr. of Bethel Deliverance International Church, a place where miracles still happen.
The Bible says Jesus Christ the same yesterday, today, and forever. Then over in Malachi, he says, I am the Lord and I change not. We have two passages that speak of the immutability of God, the fact that he doesn't change. But that's character. That has nothing to do with actions. Your God changes so much that if we are not careful, we'll miss what he's doing. I want you to see something. If you understand that it's time for a change, in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, just go there real quick. I want to show you something because this is critical to what we're doing and the course we want to set for the new year. Why do people make New Year's resolutions? Because they realize I need to change. And they have a moment of impromptu discipline. Just a moment to say, come next year, I ain't smoking no more. It has been statistically suggested that people who make New Year's resolutions, by the fifth or the seventh day of the new year, they've gone back to the old thing that used to hold them in bondage. Why? Because Jesus said, you will have what you say, but it is directly in correlation with how you think. You need a motivator to change. One of the reasons why people have such a hard time losing weight, if it's not genetic, there are some people that are genetically disposed to gain weight, and there's nothing you can do about it. You have to work harder than the average person. You're just genetically disposed to do that. You can look in your family line, and you probably have that gene. And if you have that gene, you have to work harder than a person who doesn't. But one of the principal reasons why the average person finds it difficult to lose weight is because they haven't thought about the consequences of not maintaining good weight. Now, if you go to the doctor and the doctor tells you your blood pressure is unrealistically high, that you are on the verge of developing type 2 diabetes and the other significant health challenges that come from obesity, then all of a sudden you will what? Change. Yeah, panic. But you will change as a result of the panic. You will change. You'll say, you know what? I ain't eating that no more. I'm not doing that. And that's okay for a season. Because the panic will only work for a while until you sit down and make a substantial deposit into your thought life and say, you know what? I am going to be significantly healthier. I am going to live longer. I am going to see my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren. I am going to be able to make a greater impact. I'm going to have more energy. Once you convince yourself that there are positives to be gained, then the change will be easier. We don't think in terms of what will happen when I change as much as we think how comfortable I am in mediocrity. Here's how we think. You're in a class. First thing you want to know, what do I need to pass? Now, everybody knows that you need an A to pass. You know that. But you'll say, what do I need to do to pass? They'll say, well, you can pass with a 78. Then that will be your goal. The Bible says that the husbandman must be first partaker of the fruit. I will stand before you today. I'm not going to lie to you that when I was taking my undergrad courses, I would find out they would say an A was anywhere from 1,000 points to 1,500 points. And so I would calculate how much I could drop on a test or a paper to end up with nothing less than 1,000. And so I knew, okay, if I take this test gives me such and such and such. All right, I know I have 25 points to play with. So I can still stay within that range. That's horrible. Yeah, I still had a 4 point. I still had an A, but it wasn't a 4.0. It was a 3.9 something. When I caught hold of that, I said, this is crazy. What do I need to get a 4.0? And I looked at that and worked towards it. And it was easy to do once I changed my mind. But how many things do we approach and think to ourselves, I won't be able to do it? Remember Mark 11, you'll have what you say. You'll think you can't do it. And if you think you can't do it, you can't do it. The body will not respond to what the mind says you can't do. And what type of behavior is that according to 1 Corinthians 13, 11? Childish. Because it usually means I didn't even try. Right now, think very quickly. How many things in your life have you approached thinking you were not going to be successful only to find that you were successful later and the success surprised you? How about this? I'm going to the mall and I know I'm not going to get a parking space. So you get up to the mall and you see the cars all the way down to Mall Boulevard as you come off the turnpike. And you think to yourself, I'm not getting a parking space. And you pull into the parking lot, hoping to be able to drive right out so you can tell Sister, I'm going to tell your wife that there's no parking space, so you got to pull out and go home. But she's asked God for a parking space because her and God made this rule that they're going to shop in the mall, and he sides with her, and you pull in, and there's a spot right up front near the door. But you've made the assessment from Mall Boulevard. You didn't even go onto the lot. You made the assessment from the street. Most of us make assessments about our life and our walk with God from the street, not from actually walking with God. Everybody in that Bible that God called, he called them to do what they could not do without him. But with him, they could do whatever he called them to do. Lord, help me. Listen, the Bible says that Gideon was hiding from the Midianites. He was gathering wheat in anticipation of being under a siege. The angel comes to him and says, oh, mighty man of valor. Gideon said, who, me? He said, yeah, you. Get some men and fight against the Midianite. Gideon said, there's no way I'm fighting against that vicious nation. He said, and I'm not even sure you're God. He said, well, what can I do to prove it to you? He said, let the ground be wet and let my fleece be dry. And God did that. He said, well, I'm still not sure. That was just for my left brain. Now this is for my right brain. Let the ground be dry and my fleece be wet. And God did that. I want to call your attention to something that I found to be extremely interesting. The people who test God are always rewarded. Gideon tested God, and God answered. God could have said to him, ain't no way in the world. Look, I'm God. You don't be testing me. If I told you something, do it. No, he did exactly what Gideon asked. The other person that comes to mind immediately that tested God was Thomas. Thomas said, I ain't going to believe him until he come in and let me see the holes in his hand. Jesus walked right in and said, come here. What does that tell you? In Malachi, he said, test me. Until your mind is convinced. That passage is progressive. Here's what he's saying. You test me in the beginning, and once I pass that test, you won't have to test me anymore. But at least you ought to start testing me. You will never change till you test me. Oh, yes. We don't want to test God. People tell you, child, don't test him. Just believe it. But if you believe him, test him. He said, put me to the test in Malachi. He said, put me to the test and see if I won't open up the windows of heaven and bless you. Go ahead, test me. Go ahead and give that tithe, he said. He said, give that offering to me and see if I won't do it. Change your mind about me. Give me a shot. I love this about my God. And notice when you read over in Judges about Gideon, after God convinces Gideon to go, while Gideon was asleep, he sent spies out to check on the Midianites. And while Gideon was asleep, the spies overheard the conversation of the Midianites. The Midianites were talking about the strength of Gideon. And he hadn't even fought yet. You serve a God that says, I'm waiting on you. But you are so stuck where you are and comfortable with mediocrity that you can't move to excellence. Look at this passage. Where are we? Go to Jeremiah 29. We'll come back to Ecclesiastes. We're in a new year now. By God, you're going to walk out of here with a process of change starting. Come on and start with me. Let me tell you something, brothers. God said it wasn't good for us to be alone. So he says, let me give him a helper. All right? And the King James uses the word meet. And that word meet means suitable. Let me give him somebody for him. Do you understand that? For him. All right? Now, Sister Lambert is suitable for me. She's not suitable for anybody else. That's why she's not with anybody else. She's suitable for me. Why? Because God knew he was going to call me into this. That's why I get no challenge. I get no fight. God wakes me up middle of the night and says, I need you to go on a prayer drive. 2 o'clock in the morning, I get my clothes on and go out to pray and meditate. I just tap her and say, I'm going out to drive and pray. She says, okay, be careful. And she just goes right on off to sleep. Now, if she wasn't made for me, she'd be up, where you going? I'm going with you. You can't be going out at no 2 o'clock in the morning. You creeping. No, because she's made for me. She know I ain't creeping. She's made for me. You see? So if your woman ain't made for you, she goes, I'm going with you. You can't be going out at no 2 o'clock in the morning. No. Now, why is that important? Because if the wife that you have made for you, she will help to facilitate change. Watch. Men don't change. We fall into habits that are unchangeable. We'll wear the same socks for 5 days if you let us. We just kind of pull them, snap them, and get the crust off and put them right back on. Sometimes turn them inside out and just slap them on the post and then put them right back on. We do not like change. We like the same food. We like watch the same programs. But wives push change. Now, you've heard me talk about my affection for Disney World. By the grace of God, I've been there 32 times. But watch this. You know how I got to Disney World? Sister Lambert said one day, we going on vacation, that's all there is to it, and we're going to Disney. So I tell her, she got me hooked. She sold me that crack of Disney, and now I'm jonesing for it 3 times a year. And she says, I better go with you just to make sure you're all right. I enjoy cruising. Love it now. Hated it, the concept in the beginning. You know who got me hooked? My rib. What did she say? We're going cruising. And she said, to make it better, you're going on the Disney ship. Well, how do you lose that? Now I'm everywhere. But what happened? Change facilitates change. Most of us are miserable in our relationships because there's no change.
For a copy of the message you just heard in its entirety, call 215-885-2585. And when ordering, request ID number
1116A.
Today's message is available on CD for $9 and DVD for $16. The Climbing Higher TV broadcast can be seen on WBPH TV 60, Monday through Friday at 7:30 a.m. To attend Bethel Sunday services, join us at 2929 West Sheltenham Avenue at 7:30 a.m., 11:30 a.m., and 6 p.m., with prayer and Bible study being held every Wednesday beginning at 7 p.m. For more information, visit us on the web at www.betheldeliverance.org. Thank you for tuning in to the Climbing Higher broadcast with Bishop Eric A. Lambert, Jr. of Bethel Deliverance International Church, a place where miracles still happen.